Hello, this is Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman of Columbia University speaking to you today from Medscape. In my last video blog, I said I was feeling kind of irritable and worried about whether I was becoming too much of a curmudgeon because of some developments that had occurred in the early part of the fall that seemed to reinforce my impressions of how mental health care and psychiatry and mental illness got short shrift and continued to be neglected. And then we had the presidential election and the tumultuous change that that promised to bring for better or worse, and the aftermath that was, I think, very impactful for all of us. But then this week, which is the last week of November, beginning of December, something totally unexpected happened, which has almost restored my faith in government. And that is because the Congress has orchestrated a visionary and a very clever legislative process to push, hopefully, over the goal line some sweeping legislation that will impact on healthcare, biomedical research, and drug development and device development and review in the United States. Something that could not just be positively beneficial, but actually transformative. Now, let me put this in context. Over the past year, there have been several legislative efforts that have been underway in Congress working in parallel. The one that I'm most familiar with is the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, which was initiated in November 2013 in the aftermath of the terrible Sandy Hook tragedy. And this was initiated by Congressman Tim Murphy and Congressman Bernice Johnson. And it was the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. This legislation, which really was very, very promising in terms of being able to have an impact in the way the federal government supported mental health services, had to fight its way through the legislative process for 3 years before finally being passed in July of 2016 on a near unanimous vote in the House. But that was the end of July, with vacation approaching, and the Senate, with a bill that was sponsored by Senator Lamar Alexander and Chris Murphy, the parallel to the House bill, was a far cry from it in terms of the measures that was included. And that hadn't even passed, and if it was, the two would have to be reconciled in conference. At the same time, Senator John Cornyn from Texas had introduced a bill which was to improve safety in relation to mental illness, again, occasioned by some of these mass violent incidents that occurred perpetrated by individuals who were mentally ill and not receiving proper treatment. And this also was undergoing sort of a protracted legislative negotiation and consideration process. At the same time, a more ambitious and broad measure was being pushed forward called the 21st Century Cures Bill. And the primary sponsors of this were Congressman Fred Upton from Michigan and Congresswoman Diane DeGette from Colorado. And this bill really was aimed at trying to enhance the funding for NIH to really target priority areas of scientific research and public health need. It also contained sweeping measures which would really improve the resources and the efficiency of operations of the FDA for development of drug and therapeutic devices. So all of these were sort of moving forward in parallel, facing the various types of obstacles and resistances in the Congress. And the clock was ticking and time was running out. And August came, Congress recessed, it came back in September, but it didn't act on these prior to the election. The election occurred and this tectonic change in terms of what the expectations were, you would have thought might have completely derailed any possibility that these things would be acted on during the lame duck session, which is now in progress in November, early December. And if that were the case, then everything would have to start over again in the new Congress after January 2017. But that's when this amazing thing happened. The leaders, in a bipartisan effort, determined that the best way to accomplish their ends with respect to all three of these bills was to integrate them. And what was done was that measures of the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Bill and the Mental Health Safety Bill were incorporated into the 21st Century's Cure Bill. Now, this was no easy thing to do because, as you recall, the Helping Families Mental Health Crisis House Bill and Senate version were very different. But even before a vote was taken in the Senate to approve their counterpart bill, discussions took place which essentially reconciled the two and incorporated many, if not most, of the important elements from the House bill. Now, of course, this is a little inside baseball and much more that I don't even understand went on to make this happen. But the point is that the leaders of the Senate and the House deftly found a way to extract what was mostly the best of all three of these bills in a joint effort and tee this up so that it will be voted on this week or next week, which will be the first week of December. And President Obama has already signaled his intent to sign the bill, which means that it could become law by the end of the year. And this is an extraordinary Hail Mary that I certainly wouldn't have foreseen happening and could never have thought of a way in which this would be orchestrated, but I guess that's why these people are in Washington duly elected in order to figure these things out. So it shows how Congress can do good things very ingeniously when it wants to. Now, just to give you a flavor of what this means and why I'm excited about this, let me just mention some of the provisions in the bill, which will give you a sense of that. So in the 21st Century Cures Bill, there's a provision to provide $500 million a year for the next 10 years more to the NIH budget, specifically to fund precision medicine, brain research, cancer research, regenerative medicine using stem cells. In addition, the FDA will receive $500 million over the next 10 years to implement provisions to move drugs and medical devices through the approval process more quickly. $1 billion over 2 years will be given in grants to states to address the opiate addiction crisis. Another provision directs the NIH to utilize its surprise priority in giving grants through its funding to support innovation. Another measure is directed at supporting young emerging scientists, and this is to authorize the director of the NIH to coordinate, develop, modify, prioritize policies and programs to improve the opportunities for new researchers who, in this really dire funding climate, have been struggling to get funding to launch their careers. Another provision authorizes the NIH Institute, the National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences, to support clinical trials that extend through phase two of testing, which is the all-important proof of concept stage of testing of drug development. Another measure establishes a review pathway at the FDA to develop biomarkers and other measures, objective measures, that are surrogate endpoints of therapeutic efficacy, which are important in the process of facilitating therapeutics development. Another measure requires that pharmaceutical companies have publicly accessible compassionate use policies for drugs that are being developed for serious or life-threatening conditions. This means that if patients participate in a clinical trial during one of the phase two or three studies, for FDA approval, that after the study is completed, that they can have a chance to receive the active drug, as opposed to not being able to continue to receive it if they might have gotten and benefited, or have a chance to get it if they were randomized to placebo. Another measure provides the FDA to grant accelerated approval for regenerative medicine therapeutic products, something that's badly needed for degenerative diseases and traumatic brain injury. Now, those are the measures associated with the 21st Century Cures Bill. But embedded within it is the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Reform Act, and that provides, first and foremost, with a consolidation of authority over all of the federal agencies that have anything to do with mental health care and addiction. And it does so, first and foremost, by establishing an Assistant Secretary for Mental Health and Substance Use position in the Department of Health and Human Services. So that's an Assistant Secretary at the cabinet level focusing just on mental health and addiction. In addition, it proposes that there must be a Chief Medical Officer appointed in SAMHSA, the biggest federal agency with funding of $3.6 billion to support mental health care and substance abuse treatment in the United States. Now, both of these positions are stipulated to have to be experienced, research-sophisticated, doctoral-level professionals, either MDs or PhDs in psychology, to carry this out. In addition, it says that the advisory council to SAMHSA and other federal agencies concerned with federal mental illness and drug abuse have to be included as ex officio members, the directors of the NIMH, the NIAAA, and NIDA. And this is to provide scientific heft to those advisory bodies. Now, in addition, it establishes a National Mental Health and Substance Use Policy Laboratory, which is to advise SAMHSA and other federal agencies on an annual basis as to the latest research that may be ready to translate into prime time for clinical practices that should be encouraged, incentivized, and supported by these agencies. And that this laboratory should also provide guidance which encourages solely evidence-based, proven effective practices with federal funds and with federal incentives supported. There's also stipulation that block grant support to the states be tied to the prioritization of specific public mental health needs, substance abuse needs, and for methodologies that may be proven in NIH-funded studies that are effective as preventative strategies. Now, these are substantial amounts of money that are available through these mechanisms coming from SAMHSA and the other agencies, which in the aggregate have over $6 billion a year to provide to states for funding. And then finally, in terms of the issues that were incorporated for the mental health safety bills, you have measures that are geared towards trying to address mental health on college campuses, among the homeless, in jails, among pediatric patients, among expectant mothers and perinatal clinics. You also have guidance which attempts to modify HIPAA guidelines to allow for clinicians to communicate, even without permission, medical information about mentally impaired individuals to other health professionals. Now, this measure didn't make it through with the level of rigor that it was initially composed because of controversy over confidentiality. But there is language to try and focus attention on being able to develop means that don't compromise confidentiality but still allow health professionals to communicate. In addition, There's language which supports the funding to states which encourage assisted outpatient treatment, assertive community treatment, and there's language that also eliminates any prohibition of Medicaid providing separate payment for provision of mental health care or primary care services on the same day. Previously, you couldn't charge Medicaid for two different services, even if they went for entirely different reasons. And finally, although there is not elimination of the notorious IMD exclusion, there's language which requires the impact of this on patient care to be studied for the purposes of determining in the future whether any modification of this policy needs to be changed. So, all in all, this is an extraordinary piece of legislation which I can't recall since the parity bill, or even before, that is so broad in its potential scope and impact, and has so many good things that will not just be rhetorical, but will actually have traction in terms of the way that they affect how healthcare is delivered, private access to patients, and also to have the federal agencies supporting services like SAMHSA work more closely with the NIH institutes that are developing the research for the newer, hopefully better treatments in the future. And best of all, it consolidates the authority for these under trained professionals who have sophisticated knowledge of clinical care and research. And having this tied to the 21st Century Cures legislation, which provides this real infusion of resources and increased discretionary capability to the NIH and the FDA, is a marvelous synergy of good legislation being done. So the bill is not yet passed, it's not yet signed, but it's an extraordinarily positive development which is occurring in the context of what's been a very tumultuous and oftentimes stressful year politically and in terms of healthcare. Now, one cautionary note. As good as all this is, and as much as it will mean, it will be either augmented or could be completely overshadowed if there are sweeping changes in our country's healthcare law, and specifically concerning the Affordable Care Act. If Obamacare is repealed or dismantled in a significant way, whereby the millions of people who have gained coverage now lose that coverage, this will pretty much negate much of the benefit that this legislation I've just been describing would have, because of the fact that the numbers are so much more massive, and that among the people who were lacking insurance before the ACA was a disproportionate number of individuals who suffered from mental disorders. So we don't know what President Trump or his HHS secretary nominee are going to do, but hopefully it won't affect adversely the way healthcare is currently financed in the United States and negate the good work that our Congress has just done. So my heartfelt thanks and congratulations to the congressional leaders who I've in the past said not such kind things about, but in this case, they've ingeniously come through in a way that I admire and I'm deeply grateful for. Thank you for listening. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman at Columbia University, speaking to you today from Medscape.